Log Talk Radio.
Hello, everyone. I'd like to welcome all of you back to Ohio Exopolitics. I'm your host, Mark Snyder. I think I'm going to start out by talking about Contact Report 625 today. This occurred Saturday, August 15th, 2015 at 5:44 p.m. Billy is talking to Ptah in this contact, I believe. But mostly it's just Billy who goes on and on and on, and we won't even get to all of it today by any stretch of the imagination. I'm also going to do an overview, I think. A lot of interesting information coming in on the big picture. Billy's talking about, in this contact, about ISIS. And one of the interesting things he said is that, and let me read it to you here, and it kind of falls right in line with some of the things we've seen where the Russians had such tremendous success against ISIS. Well, the reason they did is because they actually were bombing things intentionally. There's a lot of chicanery going on with our military right now. Let me read here. On the one hand, many military people and pilots probably enjoy being able to make war, whereby probably love of adventure or a joy of killing and destroying play a decisive role. On the other hand, with the entire matter of the lax actions against the IS, the key there is lax actions, which I think makes a lot of sense when you think about the tremendous success the Russians had and the blowback the Russians got for the success they had. The participating countries' profit-making plays an important role. This is namely in the form, because through the lax and almost useless munitions-wasting battles and machinations of the regular military as well as the foreign forces who hurl masses of rockets and bombs, the weapon industry, which delivers all the munitions for the fruitless actions against IS, is kept alive, whereby naturally also countries themselves profit to a great extent. So evidently what Billy's saying here is that there is a lot of activity that's going on in this fight against ISIS, which is really just money-making, governments getting tax revenues, and a lot of our weapons are wasted over there. And the U.S., he also talks about the U.S.'s involvement in this world control imperialism. That is to say, it can increasingly expand its endeavors and its political, military, and economic areas of might and influence. So, there's a lot of strangeness going on. And actually, the one he's speaking about here must be Quetzal he's talking to. And Billy goes on to talk about the Vietnam War. And you've heard of the Gulf of Tonkin incident, which allegedly started the Vietnam War. Well, according to my information here, the NSA manufactured a faulty sonar echo. That is to say, a false sonar echo, in order to let the NSA agents officially act, indeed in the form that they consciously, falsely, and mendaciously presented the harmless and false sonar echo. So when they got the false sonar echo, the U.S. Navy responded, and the destroyer Maddox, listen to this, the destroyer Maddox fired with its two heavy twin turrets. It opened fire for several hours on the imaginary and non-existent enemy, shooting wildly across the ocean. So, and then the USS Ticonderoga, which was an aircraft carrier at the time, sent aircraft to bomb Hanoi. So, anyway, we got scammed here. The U.S. got scammed in the Vietnam War by our own military. We're getting scammed right now, and we're allowing this ISIS thing to go on. We're not really using our military power. Again, the Russians were extremely decisive when they started bombing. Not so with the U.S. and the European powers. And then Billy goes on and talks some interestingly in the Contact Report 625 about how so many of our policemen now are committing murders in the name of police work, and how they will shoot for almost no reason now, which is just terrible. He goes on to talk about that. And here, let me read a second. And if the truth is seen like that, then it's going to be recognized that through such occurrences in the U.S., very many more victims of death are to bemoan than through an Islamic, Jewish, or other terror attack from non-white human beings, according to the U.S. American racial delusion. But that does not stop the world's mightiest American weapons lobby, the NRA, the National Rifle Association, from continuing to constantly nationally advance its insanity of arming the population and thereby disregarding the effective facts on the misuse of weapons. And Billy goes on and talks about the misuse of weapons. So I get my own thinking corrected here a little bit from the Meyer information as well. So, and it talks about here what he calls legalized murder, because alone in the months of January to May of the year 2015, 385 human beings were shot by the police, where legalized murder is more likely the right label. And he goes on to say how blacks are more likely to be killed by the in these police shootings than whites. So anyway, that's just a small taste of Contact Report 625. And he's talking to Patah here. And eventually, around seven pages in, Patah gets to actually speak a little bit. So let me, and I know I'm terrible about this, and I do apologize about so much doing the overviews all the time, but for some reason it always feels like more information is coming in whenever I do these overviews. So let me start out and say Edward Albert Meyer is about a 78-year-old man. He lives in Switzerland in a little village called Hinterschmidruti. That's a very beautiful village. It's about 52 minutes east of Zurich by automobile. And he has a center there called the Semyase Silver Star Center. And there's a whole group of people that for decades now have been helping him get his writings out to the world. And he's written 40 books and over 600 contact notes that describe his contacts with extraterrestrial humans. Now, some of Billy's books include The Might of Thoughts, Mach der Gedanken, The Psyche, The Way to Live, and The Goblet of Truth. And you can order some of these, I think, still from Michael Horn's site. I think that's theyfly.com. I recommend that you read these books. They're incredibly profound. The Might of Thoughts I'm going through for the fourth time. And I wanted to start out by reading something about prayer. That wishes and prayers are never a petition to a saint, but they are your thoughts from your inner self and your consciousness. They go out and then are fed back in to your inner self and your consciousness, where they create a fulfillment. Now, if you pray to a god or a deity, you eventually end up as you'll lose your inner freedom. But if you learn that prayer is actually an expression of your inner self and your consciousness, and that those prayers come back in to the inner self and consciousness, that you'll start to get inner freedom. So anyway, I wanted to just point that out quickly. There's a whole lot in our thinking that's not right, and the Meyer information points that out. Young Billy started to get telepathic messages from this extraterrestrial man named Svath when he was about 5 years old. And he got a message to go out into the forest into, I think it was called the Horrigan Forest there near Bulak, Switzerland, where he was growing up. And eventually, Svoth showed up in his silvery pear-shaped craft. When young Edward Albert Meyer walked over to the ship, he was kind of pulled in by some kind of technological power. And young Billy was in awe as he looked around on all these screens, and he could see people's images on these screens. And Svoth told him that they were going to go up into Earth orbit. They went up about 70,000 meters. And Svoth told Billy that he was going to be his mentor for the next 11 years. And he started to tell Billy about what his future life would be like, in that he would live a difficult life, that he would be a teacher and a prophet, and that there would be people that would be very unhappy about what he was teaching, and people would try to kill him. His own friends and family would turn against him. Svoth also told Billy about his previous lives, and that he had been the people that we call Enoch, Elijah, Isaiah, Jeremiah, Emmanuel, and Muhammad, and that he taught an ancient universal teaching called the teaching of the spirit. And the teaching of the spirit tells us about something called the universal consciousness, which is the driving force behind our universe. It also talks about the human spirit. It describes what reincarnation is and the purpose of reincarnation. It also describes something called creational natural laws. And we have two very important creational natural laws that we've been learning about on this show. One is love, and the other is striving. And we'll talk a little bit more today about what those are. The Meyer information, this universal teaching, also deals with learning to control our thoughts. And that's what I was talking about with the true interpretation of prayer. And then the other aspect of the teaching of the spirit deals with learning to take personal responsibility. Billy was overwhelmed with all the things that Svoth was telling him, and Svoth put a device on his head which allowed him to awaken the powers of his predecessor personalities. All of us within our subconscious have dormant memories, dormant abilities associated with our predecessor personalities. And after Svoth did this procedure on Billy, he could then see the future. He had an inner knowing of the purpose of his life. And he was filled with this incredible information. Svoth told Billy that the time that we're coming into here on the earth is going to be called the third millennium, and it's going to be some 800 years before the people of the earth start to live according to this universal teaching. And it will be a time when our leaders take away our rights of self-determination. And we all have a right of self-determination. We all also have a responsibility for independent thinking. And that's one of the things that's being undermined today, is people's ability to think independently. So we have the mass media, the newspapers, the internet, radio, television. All these things are trying to take away your rights of independent thought. And this electronic, this mass media, has a way of hypnotizing us. And we'll stay in front of this mass media for hours, and we'll be hypnotized. And let me tell you, it tells us in Contact 543 that the electronic media is destroying our minds. It's also destroying our bodies, which is even more amazing. So try to limit your amount of time in front of television, in front of the computer. Spend time outside, print out the Meyer material, and read it. And this is a struggle we're all going to have to deal with. This is one of the challenges of the third millennium. Spots told Billy that there would be a kind of confusion and maliciousness that spreads all over the earth. And we're starting to see this confusion and maliciousness. We're seeing immigration running wild, especially in Europe. We're seeing scores and scores of women that are being raped and attacked in countries like Sweden and Germany. Germany is very near, I would say, almost to a civil war at this point. So all of these things that Svoth told Billy are pretty much coming to the head right now. Svoth told Billy to stay in the background, to focus on his writings, because of a couple reasons. Because the people of the earth, they make for themselves idols. The other thing is that there would also be other people that would come forward in various places and times and start to tell Billy's story, start to talk about his information. Because Billy in this lifetime is focused on getting this information down in written form, so that future generations then can look at this material and study this material and start to make the changes that are necessary. Svoth told Billy that in 1945 that the atomic bombs would be dropped on Hiroshima and Nagasaki. And he was told that the leaders of the earth would form a secret dark order. And the secret dark order would start to take away people's rights of self-determination. They would start to take away all the power and all the money. And the people of the earth would not respond well. They would become indolent. They would become obtuse. They would become indifferent. And this would create the circumstances where we could have wars and we could have violence. And that's kind of what we're seeing in the age that we live in. And Svoth warned Billy very much about materialism. And he told Billy not to become a materialist. And that's one of the problems here on the earth is we've become materialists because we do not understand what the creation really is. So Billy had mentoring from Svoth for about 11 years. Also, Billy was receiving impulses, very powerful impulses, from the storage banks. And as a young boy, even before he had his contacts with Svoth, he one day crawled out the window of his bedroom and he looked up at a beautiful starry sky. And he said, "My life is made out of the love of creation." And it was almost as if his predecessor personalities were speaking, because he could hear his own voice say, "Since ancient times, I lived among the stars." And he saw the light which the stars emitted, but he knew that there was another light, an invisible light, which was the love of creation. And Billy started to say, at 4 years old, some of the most profound things. He said, the infinite love of creation connects all life, because in all life, that love lies hidden. And Billy, as growing up, he had a very, very difficult life, because many times he would have to skip school to go on Svoth's ship. And this put him in big trouble with his own father, who punished him very, very severely. And Billy was kind of an outcast at school, and he was an outcast among his own age group. But a lot of the older people in the village of Bullock there really had a deep respect for Billy because of his maturity and his wisdom at such a young age. And Billy also became friends with Pastor Rudolf Zimmerman. And Billy admired his humility. And Pastor Zimmerman also had telepathic contacts as well. And so the two could converse and talk about that. So Billy met with Svath for about 11 years, and Svath told him that he was about to die and that there would be another teacher that would come. And this teacher would be a woman, and she would send a robotic ship for Billy on a certain evening on a certain hill, and Billy was to go there and wait for this ship to show up. And he did that. It was a cold evening, and in fact, this ship came down and landed, and a door opened, and again, Billy was pulled into the ship. And Billy was in his teens at this point, probably about 15 or 16. I think this occurred in the early 1950s. And this robotic craft took off, and it went at a high rate of speed to Jordan. And the ship became invisible. Billy became invisible, and he's flying in the middle of the evening there. And eventually the ship lands in Jordan, and Billy steps out, and it's very warm, and he sees these red rocks, and he touches the rocks, and he feels the heat off the rocks. And then out of the sky comes this falling star that turns into a 300-meter disc. And it lands there in the desert, and Billy has to wait a half an hour before Asket steps out. Now, Asket is a woman from the Tao universe. She's from a race of people that are called the Timmers. Billy's first contact, Svath, was from a race of people called the Plearen. The Timmers and the Plearen have a common ancestor called the Lyrians, a group of people from Lyra Vega. The Timmers, Asket's people, about 800 years earlier or so, had developed the technology to penetrate the universe barrier, and there exists a parallel universe to ours called the Tao universe, an adjacent universe, and there's a barrier. And Asket's people developed the technology to penetrate this barrier, and they went into this parallel universe where they populated worlds. And the Timmers now are from the Tao universe. They live in the Tao universe. And their technology is a bit higher than the Plearen in many areas. So 46 trillion years ago, our universe was created along with this parallel universe. So there are many universes, and there are many universal consciousnesses. And there's something called an absolute absolutum, which houses all these universes, or this all of these universes. So we live in a very complicated place and a very amazing place to try to wrap your mind around. The Meyer information calls the universal consciousness a Wesenheiten, and it has only a small self-determination in terms of its evolution. It functions more automatically in the evolution. It has a predetermined plan that it goes through when it evolves. But human beings, for example, are Weisen, and we play a big role in how fast we evolve. And one of the things you should do every day is striving, and that's a creational natural law. And your personal happiness depends very much on how much you strive every day, not only to evolve your consciousness, but to perform the work that you have to do. Striving is a creational natural law, and it comes from the impulses of your inner self. Your impulses to strive, to work, at whatever your work is, and we all have more than one area of work. We have an area where we make money. We also have hobbies. Now, these hobbies are important for a whole bunch of reasons. Some people are fortunate enough to make a little money at their hobbies. In any case, all these areas that you strive in are important and associated to the evolution of your consciousness. You see, they're impulses that are coming from your innermost self. Your innermost self is most connected to creation. You have a false self which wars against your innermost self from time to time. And you'll have to deal with figuring out who is who, when, under what circumstances. But the more you are focused on your striving, the more happiness you generally will have. And you will find happiness in your work, in all your various work, whether you get paid for it or not. Whether it's working in the garden, cleaning out your garage, playing a musical instrument, doing a radio show, whatever it is, working on your flowers, whatever. You should continually be striving, because that is where your evolution is going to come from. So Billy was learning all this incredible information. He was just a sponge of the teaching he gets from Spoth. And then later, when Ascot came, even more so perhaps. So when she stepped out of her craft finally after a half an hour, it was very odd because she had almost kind of like a dress type thing on, and Billy thought to himself, wow, this must be what an angel would look like. And he also felt that somehow he knew her from somewhere. Again, his predecessor personalities kicking up again. So the two left, and they went to Egypt, and they landed far from the Great Pyramid, but close enough where they could walk to it. And she put a device on his belt, and they both became invisible to the outside world, but not invisible to each other. And Billy played some jokes there on some local people in a tent, local women who were half-dressed, and he kissed a few and then escaped. And then they traveled over to the Great Pyramid, and Ascot was able to find this entrance and go in the Great Pyramid, and where they went far, far underground for quite a long way to these old cubicle constructions, which were about 73,000 years old. Then they came to this wall with this giant stone called an ashlar, and through some technology, Ascot made it dissolve away, and they stepped through it into another hallway where the light seemed to come from everywhere and nowhere. And there was an ancient spacecraft. Somehow they got underground, and there were a few other spacecraft there. And there were religious artifacts. There was a cross. There was a crown of thorns. There was a bloody nail, blood-encrusted nail. And Billy, who had a Protestant background, was very disturbed, and he didn't know what to think about all this. He started to doubt Spoth and Ascot to a degree. He just couldn't make sense out of all this. So Ascot got him out of there, and they traveled all the way back up. And they got on the surface, and then Ascot told him about a group called the Giza Intelligences, which were on the Earth here until about 1970. But they go all the way back to ancient times, during the time of Atlantis and Lemuria. And I think, sorry to interrupt the show, but I think Nate is going to call in and join us here. The call-in number is 917-889-7099. So the Giza Intelligence used this technology called, well, it was kind of a hypnotic technology, kind of telenotic impulses. And they worked actually all the way up until modern times before most of them were killed. And there's a big underground section that still exists under the Great Pyramid, but I believe the whole area with the Giza Intelligences has been filled in. But they contacted the Thule Society, the Giza Intelligence did. They influenced Hitler via a man named Hermann Steinschneider. Oh no. Sorry, folks. We're getting just a minute, guys. My Colin's trying to call in, and he's going to have to call in. It's the only way. I can't bring him on via Skype. Sorry about this. You know, technology, it's such a pain. So Herman Steinschneider, who was actually in the Thule Society or the Thule Society, influenced Hitler. See, Hitler was actually impulsed by the Pleiaren to actually, he was going to be a positive person. He was going to help, in many ways, Earth humanity to come together. But things didn't work out that way because of the Giza intelligences. And as I've said before, the Giza intelligences, you can probably trace back the beginnings, the very beginnings, to about 130,000 years ago, where a man named Aris the Barbarian came to the Earth, or maybe it was 115,000 years ago, conquered Hyperborea. His son conquered India, and they started to try to stir up the great war between Lanus and Lemuria, but they got basically pushed off the Earth, and they went back to Beta Centauri. And then for 2,000 years, these people expanded their lifespans. They did a lot of research, particularly in war, and they were basically filled with hate. And after 2,000 years, they decided to come back to go against the people in Atlantis and Moria and get this great war started. And I won't go over all that tonight, but the Earth was almost destroyed in the Great War. And about 11,500 years ago, one of the great distant descendants of Aris, the barbarian Aris the 11th, came back to the Earth. And he was the first line in a whole line of leaders called the Giza Intelligences. Aris the 11th had a son, Jehave, and about every 3 or 4 centuries, the son would kill the father, and all the whole line claimed to be the creator of the universe, and they created this horrific religion that was based on lots of violence and fear and lies. And Jehave had a son, Jehovan, and eventually Arisaim was the first leader to take him underground. Then the man named Hen, who was also called Jehovah, who the Meyer material call the God of the Old Testament, who wiped out Sodom and Gomorrah. And then Kamagal the first took over, and then probably it was Kamagal the second who interacted with the Thule Society and Giza Intelligence. And I think my caller just called in. Hello, Nate, 714.
Hey, Mark, can you hear me?
Oh, yes. And I'm sorry you couldn't do Skype, but they've kind of, things are goofy here on Blog Talk, getting goofier all the time. So how have you been?
Oh, pretty good. Yeah, that's pretty Skyped up of them, being able to do Skype.
I wanted to ask you about the Talmud of Emmanuel. You guys are done with the translation, correct?
Yeah. So the last I heard, they're going to be distributed out of the Canada Figu.
Good.
And it should be coming very shortly now.
Will we be able to get any through Michael Horn, or how can the listeners get some?
Yeah, definitely through him, or they could go to the Figu Canada website. But that they would have to go to. There's a whole process involved. And I have something on order there, but I haven't had a chance to find the right. It's not Western Union; it's something else that you have to go to. But they explain the whole thing. But
yeah.
It's going to be. It's already a really good document, I'm really excited to see it come out.
I also have to learn that whole process. I've kind of been. I guess maybe lazy is the right word, or I don't know what but I keep always ordering through Michael, and I could probably get a whole lot more books. But the Talmud of Emmanuel would be bilingual. It'd be in English and German, right?
Correct.
Is there anything you can tell us about it that you might find interesting?
There's a lot. Actually, I had told my, there's this story in the current Bible, like the King James Version or whatever version of the Bible, that talks about a lady who came up to Emmanuel and aka Jesus, and poured this expensive mineral water on his head. And it's just like a thimble full of water, but it's very expensive. And two of her, several of Emmanuel's disciples and disciplesses, and this is a side note, there were more disciplesses than there were disciples. but they were never mentioned in the Bible, per se. They started to, scold the woman, tell her that, why she did that, and they could have taken that water, sold it, and given the money to the poor and stuff. So they were coming from a place of being ultra righteous, and then Emmanuel stopped them and said, "Hey, man, what are you guys doing? She appreciates my teaching. She wanted to do something that really demonstrated that." And she said, he told her as a reward that her part of the story will not be changed for all time, but it would be in the corrupted version of the teaching or the Bible or the Talmud. And it will also be in the Talmud. So that's, I only share that because my mom had recently asked about learning about that one.
Oh, really?
And hearing that one. Yeah. So I had read that to her from the Talmud. I was more interested in showing her about, the disciplesses at the time, but I couldn't find that chapter. I didn't print it out yet. So, but yeah.
Well, just to kind of build a whole scene for people who may listen to this archive, if you're not familiar with Ask It, in the interesting context Billy had with Ask It, I've been talking about the Giza intelligences, but one other very strange, and I think particularly strange in my own way of thinking anyway, right around 1954 or so, Billy and Asket met this traveling companion who called himself Jitsi, who was very religious, and he woke them up one day by firing his gun outside their ship, and both of them ran outside. And after this long discussion, Asket decided to include Jitsi in this time travel trip back to 32 AD. So all three of them get into the ship, and they travel all the way back in time to 32 AD, and they land outside Jerusalem in the mountains, far from town there. And Asket gives them a little devices so they can automatically translate the language and gives them appropriate clothing for the day. And I think even takes some money from the time period that she was able to treat with a special acid to make it clean and look modern. And then they started to hike from the surrounding mountains over the Mount of Olives into Bethpage. And Billy Edwards recognizes a taller man there in the group as Emmanuel. So as they're approaching Emmanuel's group, Jitsi completely freaks out and just becomes totally almost completely irrational. And Billy has to he literally punches him in the nose to get him to pull himself together. And then as the two groups merge together there outside Jerusalem, Billy walks over to Emmanuel, and they started having a very, very interesting discussion. Because now think about this. These are two men from different time periods, but they have the same spirit form. So the same spirit form is in two different places at once. And these two material consciousnesses with the same spiritual consciousness are having a conversation. And what do they discuss? Well, the thing they talk about is, one of the things they talk about is the difficulty of knowing what's going to happen in the future, and the difficulty bearing that information of what's going to happen in the future, particularly when that information deals with their own life. And they also talk about religion and how religion had some core good values in it, but how it had been distorted over time. And they talked about what the creation is and what the universal consciousness is and how that been had been over time just been distorted into this idea of a heavenly father figure. But that the universal consciousness is neither good nor evil. It's harmoniously balanced. It's kind of neutral positive. And I talked earlier about how the Meyer information refers to it as a Wesenheiten, and that it functions very automatically. It radiates love, though, which is another very interesting irony. An incredible splendor of nature is the visible expression of the love of creation, and creation radiates love. And that if you've learned to observe things intensely, that you can experience that radiating love of creation. And there's a spiritual process in your spirit form called Empfinden, which will allow you to perceive that fine, sensitive spiritual perception. And love is the highest principle in all creation. And everything fulfills that principle in absolute logic. Every tiny plant, every tiny animal. Only humanity can turn away from love. But all of creation is geared to this radiating love because it's the highest principle in all the creational natural laws. So you should not function under live and let live, but live and help live. Because true love deals with a wisdom-conditioned love that understands the interconnectedness of all things. Love isn't a false love. False love is based on romantic feelings and social status and your appearance and your rapport. But true love is very stable. False love often turns into anger or rage. So one of the things that we have to learn is the true nature of this love and how it's interconnected in all living things. And your second great creational natural law that you have to follow is that of striving. And all of nature strives. All planets, plants, all animals, all people. Out of your innermost self comes the desire to strive, and particularly for the evolution of your consciousness, because that is the purpose for our being here, is to evolve our consciousness. And Nate, I went on a long ramp there. So I mean, feel free to jump in there. I do that.
So a couple of thoughts. When we say live and help live, oftentimes people will look at that as, a slippery slope, basically, oh, you're going to live and help live. That means you're going to dictate to someone else how they should live and all this other stuff. And then, beyond that dictation comes compulsory and all that stuff. Well, I want to just assure people that if they strive to learn the teachings of creation or the spirit teachings, or I should say, and the spirit teachings, then it is clearly laid out that such a balance in that, that it would say basically you live by example and you try to create the conditions in which facilitate the changes for the better in others. And that's one way of how you help live. You don't invade them and force them unless they're grotesquely infringing upon creational natural law.
And well, that's a very good point. Go ahead.
And for people who don't understand creational, when we say creational or creation, we're just talking about that which is. So it's not outside of you. It's not inside of you. It's a holistic. It's both outside and inside. and it's how things are kind of set up to work. Things actually are just set up to work, which is very interesting. It works with or without your belief. So that's another really cool point. And also you were talking about Ask It, and which, and Sweetchi? I want to call him Sweetchi.
Jitsi.
Okay, Jitsi. What was interesting is he was, from what I understand, this is, well, I had said before to you, I thought that Ask It might be the first in the Dao universe to have achieved, basically plays the same role as Billy plays, the, you know, the Nokudemian spirit form. Yeah, and the reason why, and I think this is the reason why I thought that, because I had read in the contact reports that the Pleiyuan cannot be in relationship to the human being or the earth human, because we're kind of like an orc, give off an orc stink, and we'll drive them crazy and they'll drive us crazy. And here they went on a different journey together in the same ship with a guy who was highly religious.
Right.
And so Billy has the ability to turn on and off his, you know, his vibrational frequencies, you know, make them baser, or, you know, just let, or be in the presence of the Pleiyuan.
Mm-hmm.
I just thought it was interesting that they went on this whole journey and there wasn't a talk about, but then again, you know, there wasn't a talk about the special shielding that they used, because when they did, when the Pleiyuan do talk about special shielding, it only has a duration for, I guess, an hour or something, from what I was reading. And I can recall there.
Well, you know, one of the things that's always that I always found that very fascinating, in that our thoughts can literally, I mean, cause them to lose control of themselves, literally. And I, you know, think back to Semyasi's accident was really caused because someone came into the room there when Billy was speaking with her one time, and that's when she fell. But there's also this passage in the OM, Omphala Murata, where it talks about the Ish wishes in ancient times that were on Earth. And I think it says something about that the thoughts of the Earth people could literally kill them sometimes. Because there was...
Maybe this is why they would keep themselves hidden.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah.
According to the information with the... I guess Ptah is our Ish wish for our planet.
Mm-hmm.
And he also serves two other planets. So that's interesting too. But I also want to visit the whole, you know, giving people a greater understanding of the destruction of people's thought process or their consciousness because of these media devices.
Oh, wow, yeah.
And that is, if, you know, we can constantly and are consistently brain draining other countries, you know, and what that is basically going through and pulling resources from other countries, the smart people, the intelligent people, and we're grabbing them and we're pulling over here. And, you know, we go, oh, well, our education system is busted, you know. But at the same time, if you kind of look back in history, we were the ones to start the whole media blitz first, you know, with television and movies and overstimulus for enjoyment. And as that progression has continued, we produce less and less engineers and less thinking people. You know,
That's true. That's so true. You know, we should do a show on Contact Report 553 just to scare everyone to death. It scares me to death. I can't even read any more than a couple paragraphs in it. And I just like, oh, go ahead. I'm bad.
Okay. one of the things people can use to or think about is, you know, their old rotary phones. I mean, I used to know all my friends' phone numbers. Now I know maybe a handful.
Yeah.
Because they're all on my cell phone. And on top of that, you know, and people might go, well, that's just silly. But I have a cousin-in-law that doesn't know the months of the year. That wouldn't be so bad if he wasn't 17 years old. Okay.
Wow.
But when he was asked or when he was questioned about it, he's like, well, why do I need to know? The phone knows for me. The computer
wow.
knows for me.
Wow.
Anything I, you know, and then you got these people that are like intellectual Googlers, right? Oh, I'm going to, Google has my answer. Google has my answer. So what do you, we need you for? You know, what are you alive for? But there's much more than just memorizing things. There's all, there's a huge interchange and challenging and striving that goes on between you and remembering something.
Oh, wow.
And developing that muscle.
That's a very good point, Nate. Very, very good point. You know, and another thing I recommend people do from time to time, if you come across a passage in the Meyer material that you feel like is important and you think you're not completely getting it for whatever reason, memorize it and then say it out loud. And then you'll suddenly like, wow, now I'm starting to understand it. I don't know why that is, but there's something about that that can help a lot.
Right. And no one, I mean, these are just kind of simple tools that we're like almost rediscovering, in my opinion, you know, for a lot of us.
You know, it's interesting that your friend there said, why do I need to know? I've heard nieces and nephews say that before. Why do I need to know that? Which is just shocking to me, absolutely shocking, you know. That leaves me speechless. I don't even know what to say. It's just, go ahead.
And then, and that reminds me of being told to shut up oftentimes when I do speak about things that actually mean something. If you speak about the truth, or you speak in honesty, or you speak of wisdom, you know, I'm oftentimes told to shut up. And how I'm told to shut up, I always find fascinating.
Oh,
like,
really?
One of the ways people tell me to shut up, you know, is they'll compliment me. They'll say, oh, you're like a wise person, and da-da-da. And then I go, and I'm not even thinking of like, that. I mean, I'm like, kind of, I take it in stride. I don't even let it faze me. I just continue talking as I was talking, but that was their cue to have me to shut up.
What was so, it?
Yeah, that happens an awful lot. But
how's
you know what, one thing.
Go ahead.
Oh, go ahead.
No. I was going to take you off on a tangent again. Go ahead.
I was going to say, well, you know, but I've never been, when I've been talking about sports or something, I've never once been told to shut up about sports. And if you are told to shut up about sports, it must be because of your nagging wife.
Yeah.
Right.
Right.
You know, and it's just like, why, you know, why do things that actually mean something people are afraid of? You know, when we talk about the idea of gun control or something, people get hugely emotional there.
Yeah.
You know, and it's just maybe they haven't learned to deal with their emotions. They've never been taught about themselves. They've never been taught about meditation, what meditation actually is. You know.
Let me read this. It kind of goes along with evolution. Once the human being consciously, volitionally takes the work and all toil of the progress upon himself/herself in the recognition of the necessity for evolution, then he or she has truthfully grasped a part of the sense of life, has recognized the life as a gift, and truly loves it. Toil is the price of evolution, and it means when a human being loves the life through toil, then he/she is familiar with one of the innermost secrets of life. You know, this book is different than his other books. Have you gotten this one yet, The Way to Live?
Yeah, I have really great passages that I've got kind of highlighted in there. I'm trying to highlight. I'm still working my way through some other, mainly The Mites of Thoughts. I keep on reading that one a lot. A Mite of the Thought. But there's one that struck me, and it was on page 164. I think it was 193 on page 164 in like the second or third paragraph down. And it talks about clothing yourself as a human being in morals. And that can lead to a really lopsided life. And that's an interesting thing to think about. Like, because we're all trying to be moral in, you know, in one way or form or another. But it seems like he used the whole idea of taking a songbird and, you know, poking out its eyes so it can't fly.
Can I read it?
Yeah, definitely read it.
And this was just a horrific analogy. I remember reading this myself. If a human being limits his, her life and its developmental change through a teaching of morality, which is estranged from creation, he/she is like one who cuts a songbird's wings and furthermore confines it in a small cage. Or he/she is like one who pokes out the eye of a nightingale so that it lives in constant darkness and sings to exhaustion because for it, the blindness is night. But just as a human being does not become a true human being through his or her morality when it is estranged from creation, the song of the blinded and confined bird does not become the song of freedom and happiness. Isn't that devastating?
It is. But, yeah, I think you can apply it to certain people in your life. I know I can. Like, I know people that won't try a specific type of food because it's taboo or you know, for like example, having an alcoholic drink. You know? I'm not saying getting wasted. I'm saying just try it, you know, spend a little too much time, you know, in the sun or whatever. Just something that gives you an edge to being a human being, I would say, I guess. That's a decent way to put it.
Well, this whole idea about, I guess what it's saying is that if you accept morality as spirituality, and if you enforce morality and then destroy your spirituality, you're doing something much worse than immorality would be. So there's a kind of destructiveness that occurs when you enforce on people morality instead of teaching them the spiritual principles of it so that they can choose morality. Anyway, that's my take on it, I guess. There's something else here.
From a first person. Go ahead.
I was going to say, we've only got about 2 minutes left on the stream. So I would just read one little section here that I think is also mind-blowing, and I'm just barely scratching the surface on what these things mean sometimes. Time is a swinging wave which interweaves everything and glides gently and undetectably from ego to ego and through endless space, during the course of which the human being lives, acts, learns, and passes away again. And then it goes on and talks about morality. The human being also learns morality, but if in his learning and life, he/she only props himself up on that and only clothes herself or himself with that, as with a garment, then he or she has fallen prey to one-sided morals, which are estranged from the truth. And then it goes on and says it would be better for him or her if she went around completely naked and let her skin be tanned by the wind and the sun so that it becomes more natural and resistant. And then it goes on to the analogy of the songbird. Thanks for coming on, Nate. It's always a great conversation. We've got about 45 minutes left on the stream. Nate, thanks all the listeners in the chat room and the folks that will listen to this on the archive. Thank you. And we'll be back tomorrow probably, hopefully. Talk to you later, guys. Have a good evening.